All right, welcome into the Fan Pregame Friday night. Ailish, Forfar, Justin, Cuthbert, a big night on the network for Stanley Cup playoff games ahead, starting at 7:30 p.m. with Vancouver and Nashville. We've got Jays hosting Shohei Ohtani for the first time in a Dodgers uniform at the Rogers Center tonight. Lots to get through. We'll talk to Ben Verlander at 6:30, who is a big Shohei fan. Mm-hmm. But let's bring in our first guest and not let him wait any longer. Elliot Freeman joins us in studio. Freege, it's so good to have you in here in person.
It's nice to see this studio finally classed up.
Yeah, because you walked in? Or what?
No, definitely not me, Ailish. I was not the person I was referring to. There's been some real low-class radio and television come out of this place, so it's nice to see you guys bringing the other level to it.
Yeah, it's good to have company, too. You're helping class up the joint as well, Freege. Okay, so let's get right into it. We don't have too much time. Changes, obviously, in the playoffs for players, coaches, officials, pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
What about insiders? There's a lot of important stories infecting Canadian markets. Thatcher Demko, William Nylander. How you get information, a little bit different this time of year?
I have to say, it was, it's funny you mentioned this, Justin, because I was having a conversation with somebody today just about injury reporting. And I don't know if it's because of social media. I don't know if it's because of the gambling influence, of which we take a lot of money from. But I think it's all changing. I mean, obviously, I was in the middle of it this week. It's not something you're always comfortable with, but it happens. But I really do think, and I was talking to about with some teams, like, the needle is moving. I think there always is a feeling that, like, people who say players don't target injuries, that's BS. And I immediately discount anyone's opinion who says, oh, the players should be more understanding of this because nobody targets injuries. I think that's a way too naive world way of looking at the world. But the one thing I really sense now is that teams are starting to realize, or they should realize, that the fan acceptance of the way injuries used to be reported, and even the media acceptance of the way injuries used to be reported, is changing. And I confess, I'm not entirely comfortable with it, but I was in the middle of it this week, and you know the rules going in.
Okay, so let's start with the William Nylander discussion. Mm-hmm. Saw him in front of cameras for the first time in a while today, and he said he was doing well and maybe playing tomorrow night. So your understanding of the ailment of William Nylander, you wrote about and you talked about yourself. What do you think the next steps are for the Maple Leafs?
He looked like a guy who's about ready to play, Ailish. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the conspiracy theorizing is that they probably wouldn't have made him available if he wasn't getting close to play. And that's not just Toronto. That's generally a lot of teams. If a player is injured and not a quote-unquote a player, they keep him away. The fact that he was working on the power play today. He was taking a more regular line rush than he has been in previous days. And the fact he spoke to the media, that says to me, barring anything changing overnight, he's going to play in game number 4. I think there still is a little bit of mystery about exactly what happened here. There were definitely some migraines, but in terms of the exact diagnosis of what caused them or what exactly they're calling it, I don't think we have a good answer. And to be honest, I don't know if we'll ever get one. But that was what we were dealing with here.
Maybe fewer dots to connect regarding Thatcher Demko, but ahead of game 3.
No, people are
quickly
saying torn ACL now.
So yeah.
What's going on?
It's going back and forth. But again, maybe there's still something to be determined here. But I guess just the latest on Thatcher Demko
with the caveat and understanding, Justin, that teams are not exactly that helpful at this time of year. And mm-hmm. neither, to be honest, are agents. They're protecting their clients, too. I was surprised at that report last night because yesterday I had people telling me they were optimistic that it wasn't a worst-case scenario. So this is what I think it is. I think it is something that cannot go under the knife. Like, it's not an injury. Like, sometimes when someone goes in and has surgery, they could say, here's our timeline. Mm-hmm. I think because this is something that is not headed for that, at least not at this time, they don't know exactly. Mm. The thing I keep getting told is, don't guess. And what that says to me is, they don't really know either. I think it's one of those things that he just has to rest up and relax and not push it, and then we'll see where it goes. I I think they are hopeful that if they beat Nashville, it could be sometime in the second round. But nobody knows exactly. I think it's a good sign that he's traveling. I think if he was really incapable of movement, he wouldn't be on the trip.
Big one tonight, Vancouver and Nashville. That's game 3, 7:30 on Sportsnet. We will see you there. Let's go into some Eastern Conference. Tampa facing a potential sweep. I wonder for you if there's consequences that you could see if let's say they lose in 4 or 5, okay? Is Stamkos the consequence possibly of losing a series that dramatically, maybe not wanting to be a part of this team in the future or looking elsewhere?
You know, Ailish, I think you have to look at the fact that it's gotten to this point that it is a possibility. The last time he was non-restricted free agent, it got to within, I think, 4 days of the cutoff. But, you know, the one thing that I think Tampa knows, and they kind of used this against him last time, is that he doesn't want to leave. Mm. You know, he wants to, his family loves it there. They're very happy. He loves it there. He has never wanted to be on any other team except the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think the Lightning do know that. Julien Brisebois, the GM there, he keeps a very low profile, but he is, as I joked with Jeff earlier today, he's a killer. Like he's in it to win it. This is a team, they got to game 6 of the Stanley Cup final against Colorado 2 years ago, and 24 to 48 hours later, he was telling Ryan McDonough, sorry, yeah. You need to help us find you, get traded, or else we're going to put you on waivers. Like he makes hard decisions. So I think, look, it looks like, barring a massive comeback here, it looks like kind of the end of the road for this great group of Lightning, a lot of whom will be going to the Hall of Fame. They're not barren. They've got a lot of good players signed. But Stamkos is up. Hedman's got one more year. And I think that they will look at this and say, this isn't acceptable for us. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do about it?
It's interesting because you're closing the season and Tampa's playing really well and they look like a dangerous team, and then 3 losses, and it's like, okay, maybe we're rethinking what may have settled down, at least in terms of Stamkos and maybe some other players on that roster. They're probably the most vulnerable right now. I think second most vulnerable would be the Dallas Stars in terms of where they're at
wild.
In the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Of course, down 0-2 to the Vegas Golden Knights. What happens to Dallas? Because you mentioned maybe not cutthroat with Brisebois, but has to make decisions. I mean, Dallas is in a position where they are desperate to win. What happens to Dallas if the Stars fade out so quickly?
You know, it's a great question because I think that Dallas still looks at it as they've got a lot of good young players who are going to be really good for a long time. Like they called up last night, Maverick Bourque was named mm-hmm. the AHL MVP, and they called him up tonight. So I assume he's going to play tomorrow night in Vegas. I think a lot of it is they keep moving forward because a lot of their guys are signed and they've got a lot of great players and a lot of good young players. However, you know, you're gonna look at this and say we can't come back with the same thing. If they don't turn this around, like one of the guys I'm wondering about is Pavelski, because if you look at Pavelski and his history, Justin, he's usually signed by now. Mm. Since he got to Dallas, you know, he signed the 1 4-year deal. But I think since then he's signed, I want to say 2 1-year deals. I have to double check. But he usually does it earlier than this. So this is at least making people wonder, okay, what's everybody thinking here? Like, for the most part, I think if you're Dallas, you look at your talent and say, we keep plugging along, even though this would be incredibly disappointing. That, to me, is the one major change they'd be looking at.
I guess if we're sticking with degrees of uncertainty, maybe the Maple Leafs, you could put in that on both sides.
Next rung on the ladder.
Let's go just to the decision, or the pending decision, I guess, of netminders for the Boston Bruins, because Jim Montgomery today said, we're sticking to the plan. So is the plan to go back and forth all series long, maybe Ullmark getting another start tomorrow night? How do you just view the steadfast approach that we're going to be unwavering in our confidence in this plan?
Well, you know, even if I was married to Jim Montgomery, he wouldn't tell me. Like we learned that earlier in the week. Mm. If it was me, I would have gone to Swayman in game 2 and Ullmark in game 3. Obviously, I'm not in charge because they didn't do that. If it was me, Swayman would play tomorrow night. Now, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Ullmark is playing tomorrow night. But if you remember the way they did it last year, which they said they won't do it again, It was Ullmark for the first six games and Swayman for game seven.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if they're going to do it the reverse. First four games, they split and then decide on who finishes the series. That's now my theory. Yeah. Now, I've had a lot of terrible theories this year that haven't worked, but that's the one I'm going with right now.
That's an interesting one. I wonder, yeah, because you go into this plan and they've rotated for so long. Like, at what point do you not worry about losing the other, if that makes sense?
Yes.
Maybe it's too early for that. But again, I don't know. It just feels like that shouldn't be a problem with those two, the relationship they have. And I guess they've been good pros. I guess I'm saying that somewhat anecdotally. But
they had a good
it
hug.
Just feels like... Yeah, when push comes to shove, they're going to have to make the decision, but maybe it's too early to make the decision right now.
The one thing I will say, Justin, is that, you know, it's like my grandmother's old line, you plan, God laughs.
Yeah.
But when you explain a plan to someone, especially pros, you have to have a good reason for changing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if they said we're splitting the first four games and then deciding.
The Maple Leafs down 2-1 in the series. Obviously, game four tomorrow night's pretty critical.
Yeah.
You and Grange co-wrote an article, you know, detailing what's going on with the changes at MLSE. What do we know about the stakes here, the consequences, if things stay the same? And I don't want to play the hypothetical game too much.
Yeah.
But if it's
well, that's
similar,
sports radio and
that's,
sports
that
TV.
That is sports radio and television.
We all play the hypothetical game.
Right. If this goes, if it stays status quo, if the Maple Leafs lose in 5-6, maybe 7. It's just the same story being written again. Where does your mind go when thinking about contemplations over the summer?
Well, the number one thing is I think that Keith Pelley is trying not to set off landmines. I think he's really trying hard not to do that. So he's kept a low profile. He's done some interviews. I heard the interview he did with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
yes, it's the golf.
Yeah, you know.
You think
what?
He meant that?
You know, yeah, you know
he
what?
He was distracting us with free round.
Yes, and I would take him up on it.
I'm going to message him.
Absolutely. You know, it was good strategy by Keith. You guys asked him two questions, and it took him 24 minutes to answer them. Like, that
noticed
is,
that one.
That is PR skill, I have to say. Look, he's trying to be very careful. You know, the one thing I really believe is that when he comes in, whenever you bring someone into that position, I think everybody understands that change is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and again, too, like, I don't know if you guys have ever worked for Keith. I have. And my history with him is he gives you enough runway to determine your own fate. Mm-hmm. He says, you know, I'm gonna create an environment where you can be successful. You are going to be given the tools that you need to be successful. And if you are successful, we're going to be just fine. If you're not, then, you know, there's going to be trouble. And, you know, I think this. I know one thing at MLSE. Ever since Babcock, they don't like removing anyone with term. They have generally stayed away from that. The Babcock thing really changed the way they approach things. I just feel with Pelley, if things are unsuccessful in all the sports sides, he will not hesitate to make changes. I've always believed that.
Talking to Elliot Friedman, of course, ahead of a big night of Stanley Cup playoffs on Sportsnet. Just one last one on the Leafs, and I guess it kind of leads into that. Marner in July 1st, how important is playoff success, this series, this stretch of hockey for what might happen starting July 1st?
I think it's really critical. It's, you know, you look at Pettersson, Vancouver, you look at Marner in Toronto, you see a lot of similarities, even though, you know, Pettersson really hasn't been in the playoffs with that team very much. You can see the way both of those markets are reacting around those players early on. You know, for me, I think that Marner, in a lot of ways, his own worst enemy is himself, in the sense that I think he puts a ton of pressure on himself. And, you know, when it, like, people say, oh, he doesn't care. That is complete BS, the idea that he doesn't care. I think he cares. In some ways, I think he cares too much. I think he almost mentally straitjackets himself because he cares too much. But look, like, the calendar determines all. As you said, Ailish, we get to a point where he can extend. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to come down to two things. I think it's going to come down to, A, how well he does on the ice, and, B, what that extension looks like. And I think those two things together... Now, the other thing, too, with Nylander is, don't forget, before they signed Willie, they basically put him out there in the league last summer and said, give us your, we want a stud D, the best D we can find. And we want to know what the market is. And even if they wanted to trade him, they didn't find a deal that they liked. So I think that's part of it too. Marner has a no trade clause. He controls things. It'll come down to A, how well he plays from here on out. B, what the next contract looks like. And C, what if it comes to a trade, what they're all willing to do together. But I think the number one thing with him is you know, he just has to, I see it again. He puts so much pressure on himself, and it eats him alive when he doesn't do well. And it just, it snowballs. I see that with him.
Marner, at least contractually, is somewhat bulletproof, right? Like, he's in this position where, yeah, he can sign July 1st, but they can't really do anything about it, right? Like, what are the options for the Leafs? Let's say they're not that enthused about getting into an extension and furthering the partnership based on what we see. Like, is there really a course of action for Brad Fuller?
If we get to that point, I think the only thing that they can really do is say, look, if you want that eighth year, you're not going to get it here. That's, you know, that's really, if we get to that point. Look, I think this. I think everybody would love to, everybody, including him and them, if you asked everybody what their preference was, they get married and they live together forever and ever, amen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know, like, your guys' marital status, but, you know, all roads to the aisle, they come with challenges on the way.
Yeah. I'm getting married this year, Elliot. Now I'm like, she gave me tips off
that,
air.
Maybe you could slip that in the vow somehow.
Elliot said this.
the planning causes a lot of stress.
Yeah, we're making it through.
I'll tell you that much.
Let's get to the Oilers and Kings tonight. Sportsnet, 10:30. You'll be around for the broadcast, of course. We're through two games in that series. Have you seen anything through the first two games that's changed your opinion at all about the Edmonton Oilers and the possibility of them bringing the Stanley Cup back to Canada?
No, I didn't like the way Skinner played in game two. That's one thing. McDavid was pretty quiet in game two, but I'm not expecting that to be the same. He'll bounce back in a big way. I think the one thing that really surprised me was, honestly, just I didn't think that LA could play 5-4 games with Edmonton,
mm-hmm.
and they did.
They may be choosing to, which is interesting.
Yeah, you know, on some level, it's not that you're choosing to. At some point in time, sometimes you just can't. you have to trade. Yeah. They could still do a lot better job. There's no question. Skinner's just got, like, every goalie's going to have bad games. He's had his one bad game for the series. You can't have too many like that.
Last one for you, Elliot, and I know tomorrow will be an important one, 8 p.m. on Sportsnet on Hockey Night in Canada. I'm going to talk about Bob Cool. I want to give you an opportunity to share your thoughts and your memories, even just a thought that you've had over the last 24 hours, and, of course, losing someone so important to this network and this experience that we've all had kind of being under the Bob Cool, I guess, development and remembering those memories of him ushering us through incredible hockey moments.
I guess what I would say, Ailish, is, you know, I've written and talked about a lot of my memories, but I think the one really nice thing is that, you know, sometimes we lose someone and people don't all see them the same way. Like, you feel positively about them and then you read or hear other negative things and you're like, oh, I wish that people saw this person the same way I do. Or, mm-hmm. you really don't like someone and you're like, I can't believe all these people are, you know, writing these things. But in this particular case, it's near unanimous. Mm-hmm. We will never get to total unanimity in this day and age, but this is as close as it gets. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. Like, some of us knew Bob, other people didn't know Bob, mm-hmm. but it didn't mean we all didn't appreciate him in the same way. I think everybody appreciated his talent and the way he called a game. And some people did it knowing him, and some people did it just watching or listening to him. And that's the best thing about this, is it's near unanimous in how awesome he was at what he did.
Yeah.
As I said to Merrick, I know when my time comes, it's not going
to
be this.
Oh, come on. We will have lots of time to get to that, Elliot. Well, I appreciate your time tonight. Of course, tonight is a big one. Vancouver, Nashville at 7:30, Edmonton and LA at 10 o'clock. That's a doubleheader on Sportsnet. If you're looking for the Rangers and the Washington Capitals, that's Sportsnet 360, at 7 o'clock. And Winnipeg and Colorado will be on CBC at 10 o'clock. We will take a quick break. On the other side, we'll get you to
Ailish, one piece of advice.
Oh, yes.
Set your limit for a number of people you're inviting and don't bend it.
Well, I was going to send you an invitation.
No,
but
I know. I'm not coming. I know I'm not coming. Okay, well, it's okay.
I'll press unsend on the paperless post here. But that's very sweet. Thanks, Elliot. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, we'll get you set for the Dodgers in town to face the Blue Jays and maybe some booing at the Rogers Center tonight.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A big night tonight on the network. Vancouver and Nashville game 3 at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet. We just talked to Elliot Friedman about that. If you missed it, you can check our podcast. Game 3 Edmonton and LA at 10 o'clock. If you're looking for the Rangers and the Capitals, that's on Sportsnet 360 tonight at 7. And CBC will have Winnipeg and Colorado at 10 o'clock. A bunch of important game 3s in the NHL. And welcome to Toronto, Shohei Ohtani. Sportsnet 1 will have the Dodgers' first game here at the Rogers Center with Shohei Ohtani at 7 o'clock, also on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So a lot of people flooding to the Rogers Center. How do you think the reception for Shohei Ohtani will go tonight?
Yeah, you know it's a big night on the network when you're just shooing in Shohei Ohtani, or shoehorning in, excuse me, Shohei Ohtani. I don't know exactly. I mean, I kind of have an idea. I'm sure there will be some boos. But I think, you know, what happened with Shohei to start this season, the fact that his best friend betrayed him and all those things regarding the gambling controversy that was, like, is he not more of a sympathetic figure just a little bit? Like, my lust for booing Shohei, which doesn't really exist, but the lust or any lust I had, I think is gone a little bit. Like, I kind of felt bad for him a little bit. My most recent emotion toward him is sympathy, not anger. That's the way I'm putting it.
It's you're not going in there with a blowtorch tonight. You might be more relaxed, just with a slight boo.
Yeah, and again, the lust for that was not exactly, like, over the top.
Okay.
Like, I got the Mad Men meme in my head when I think about Shohei, where he's just like, I don't think about you at all. Like, I do kind of think that's the situation. As much as the Blue Jays were involved, I kind of think the plan was in place for a while. Shohei was going to be a Dodger, and we just kind of got wrapped up a little in it a little bit. And for that reason, like, I'm not necessarily feeling all that boo-ish or boo-hungry. But I'm sure a lot of Blue Jays fans will be.
I think they will. There'll be some boo birds tonight. And this is never to say how to fan or not to fan. I think
it's a
big discussion
in
the city.
How
to fan and not to fan. You do whatever your fan dollars you want to do. But I could totally anticipate some heavy boos for Shohei Ohtani tonight. And the thing is, he's not letting any of this affect him this year. The best friend and the scandal and the... which team am I going to go to? I'm going to be a billionaire. He got married. Like, there's a million things that's gone on in Shohei's life, and he's absolutely crushing it.
I wonder if he got the advice from Elliot.
He probably did. He's got 39 hits, 6 home runs. His batting average is .358. He's got 22 runs, 16 RBIs, a .419 OBP, and a 1.6 WAR, which is top 10 of MLB already. He's just a DH. He's not playing any other positions. He's just making offensive magic for the Dodgers, who are first in the NL West. 16-11 record, and they're just behind the Braves, Brewers, Cubs, and Phillies in the NL in general. They are the favorites to win the World Series early on. There's some teams statistically better than them, but if you look at the way they've put this team together, and we're going to talk to Ben Verlander in about a few minutes here. Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts are absolutely this incredible tandem, and think about how much better it can get when Shohei is pitching again. So this is step one of a big, long journey as Shohei is a Dodger. And tonight it will be bitter for some fans that got wrapped up into it like me. I totally thought that Shohei Ohtani was going to be a Blue Jay at one point. I was picturing the jerseys and what it was going to be like to cover the Blue Jays all summer on the Fan pregame and how amazing it would be for our station and our network and our city. And we talked about the generational the generation of players that could grow up knowing Shohei Ohtani was a Blue Jay and in their city and in their country. Like, he had this ability, and it's not the way it went. So I think there'll be some bitterness.
Yeah, and that is the thing driving it, though, right? Which may catch Shohei slightly by surprise. Like, I'm sure he's going to expect something.
I think he's ready.
But again, like, and it might be different just because every ballpark he goes into, and I don't know this for a fact, like, maybe he's probably getting some cheers. Like, I don't think he's booed ravenously everywhere he goes, but I guess he'll hear it a little bit tonight. Just like, if we're comparing it to the John Schneider boos at points this year, like, does it,
I think it's
does it
above
go,
that.
Does it go above yeah. that? I don't know if it's going to go above that. We shall see.
All right. Ben Verlander, Fox Sports and the Flippin' Bats podcast joins us. Ben, we appreciate you taking the time. It's a big night in the city of Toronto. Shohei Ohtani did take a plane here yesterday. So how do you expect Shohei's reception to sound the first time he's seen at the Rogers Center tonight?
I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like a lot of Toronto thought he was coming there. You know, I think down to the last second, the Blue Jays and fans thought they had a real shot at it. I think everybody did. And so it's interesting. You know, none of it is his fault that he didn't, that the rumors were flying that day, that he was flying there and all of that. But I still don't expect people to be thrilled that he's not on their team. But I think by and large, when most people watch him play, there aren't typically a lot of boos. I think he's going to get a lot of cheers and a lot of oohs and ahs and maybe some boos just because it's Blue Jays fans and they wish he was there.
Yeah, it will be different than previous experiences for sure, where people just wanted to come see Shohei. And now there might be, of course, some scorn lover syndrome going on at Rogers Center. But we'll see and we'll find out soon enough what it looks like when Shohei Ohtani heads out there on the field. Let's talk about what he's done for the Dodgers so far. Of course, this is only half of the Shohei Ohtani experience as he's limited to his DH role. But the first look in Dodger blue, like, has he exceeded expectation, met expectations? Where has he sort of come in on what everyone was bracing for and hoping for in Dodger blue?
Yeah, I think you'd have to say he's exceeded them to a degree. But I think the fact that he does do both, and this year he's only doing one, has allowed him to focus on just hitting. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that labor. I mean, he's the best in pretty much every category across the league offensively right now, which speaks volumes about his tenure with the Dodgers so far. So I would say he's exceeded them, and it's impressive. The guy's hitting like 370 on the year right now with like a 1,200 OPS. It is truly ridiculous.
And he's got Mookie Betts beside him doing basically the same. How has that tandem been? What a beautiful surprise maybe to have them working so well already together in terms of just that offensive explosion. Having two guys like that, it must be fun to watch Dodgers baseball.
Yeah, I think the funny part to me is that Freddie Freeman's not even really hitting right now. And one, he's still hitting like 295. So that's Freddie Freeman not hitting great. It's him hitting right around 300. It's remarkable having the three of those guys back-to-back-to-back in the lineup. I think they all help each other. I think they're going to help each other be better. I think we're seeing that, you know, Mookie has Shohei behind him. Shohei has Freddie behind him. And I think the three of them are all bouncing off of each other and allowing each other to have more success. And, you know, that's typically what happens in a lineup. I know when you're surrounded by guys that are very talented, you know, it ends up being this internal, like, competition against them. And you all help build each other up. And I think that's what we're seeing right now is the three of them just bouncing off of each other.
So a month ago, the story regarding Shohei Ohtani was about, you know, betrayal and concern, I guess, for Major League Baseball, like a real scandal or the possibility for a real scandal. Of course, that is quieted down now that they've reached some sort of conclusion or at least clarity on the matter. Is the most impressive thing about Shohei's season is that he's just been able to play and perform and exceed expectations when something so terrible and unforeseen was the precursor to the season.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about the fact that he's signed with a new team, a new organization, so you already have the pressure of wanting to perform there. And then everything that came out basically on opening day for the team, I can't imagine everything that goes into it and that he was dealing with the investigation and to put up the numbers he has so far. You're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think anybody in the world would bat an eye if he was struggling a little bit with everything that's going on and that was going on. The fact that he is doing what he's doing, I do think is even more impressive with everything he's gone through.
So it's a little bit of a homecoming. Well, not really for Shohei, what it could have been, but Teoscar Hernandez, it was a fan favorite here for the Toronto Blue Jays and goes deep in yesterday's game for the Dodgers. We really miss him. So tell us all the good things that Teoscar Hernandez is doing for the Dodgers, and maybe you guys can leave him here when you head to your next destination.
Yeah, you know, I love Teoscar Hernandez. I got to know him right before the season started. He came on my show, Flipping Bats, and just became a big fan of him as a person. Obviously, all Blue Jays fans know about him, the player, because he was there for a while and played really well. But I've just walked away really impressed with who he is and the way he goes about his work. And I've just become a big fan of his, and he's been huge for that lineup. If you can plug a guy like him into the 5-6 slot in the order, you're just going to walk to 100 RBIs with a team like he's surrounded by. So, I think he's excited to get back in Toronto and potentially.
We're chatting with Ben Verlander, Flippin' Bats Pod, and Fox Sports MLB analyst. Okay, so the Dodgers have Shohei, and the Dodgers have Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts and Teo, as you mentioned. And they're firmly cemented as the World Series favorites at this point. But what don't they have, Ben? Is there something that is lacking for the Dodgers, something that may need addressing over the course of the season? Because, yeah, you don't load up like this without World Series ambition. And if you have that, you're probably going to look to rectify any mistakes that may have been made along the way. Are the Dodgers going to be looking for anything over the course of the season through the trade market to shore up any deficiency they might have?
Pitching. It's pitching. I don't think, as their team is currently constructed, that the Dodgers are going to be able to win a World Series as is. I think they have pitching issues, depth in the rotation issues, certainly bullpen issues, depth in the lineup issues. I mean, 7, 8, 9 in that lineup, you're struggling to find somebody hitting 200. So they are very good and very star-studded and talented. But, you know, if they can't figure out their depth issues, I think come October, they're going to be exposed a little bit. So, and then you're counting on guys like Tyler Glass now in the rotation to pitch and be healthy all year long. Unfortunately, he hasn't thrown over 130 innings in a season in his career. So now you're all of a sudden counting on a guy like him to be the ace of the staff and throw 200 innings and be the leader of that pitching rotation come October. And I think he can be if he stays healthy, but there's just a lot of question marks to me and not a lot of depth. And over the course of 162 games, that gets exposed. So we'll see. But I don't believe as of right now that they're good enough to win a World Series. I think they would need to add at the trade deadline, which I expect them to do. But, yeah, they have some issues.
A team that might be selling at the trade deadline or are contemplating their future would be the Astros. I saw on your podcast, of course, Flippin' Bats, that you guys were talking about the future or how they're going to crawl out of this if they can. 7-19 start, a big surprise. How do you assess the state of the Astros and what could be on the horizon for them?
Yeah, you know, they got to turn it around, and the past tells us that things change from year to year, but by and large, it's the same team. They just had serious health concerns with the rotation. They're throwing out there every fifth day, you know, guys like, and this is no disrespect to them, but Spencer Arrighetti just made his big league debut, and he's running out there every day with a 10-plus ERA. That's just not going to cut it. So they need guys to start coming back and getting healthy. I know Framber Valdez comes back this weekend, but you're still missing guys like Christian Javier, Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy, and you just need those guys to compete. So it is still early. That's my whole thing. Everybody wants to push the pull the fire alarm and say that, you know, everybody is all – the Pets' heads are falling off, but it's fine. We're 26 games into the season, 27 games into the season. Is it pretty? It's absolutely not pretty. But, you know, I'd be willing to have the conversation about how worried I am come the All-Star break if they're 10 games back. There's 140 games left. So, you know, it's not pretty, but the talent on the team tells you that they're capable of certainly turning it around and being just fine.
While the biggest AL East import could have been Shohei Ohtani over the offseason, it wound up being Juan Soto with the New York Yankees. Of course, he is eligible to sign a massive contract, maybe reminiscent to Shohei's this offseason. Like, where do you begin to sort of value that potential deal? Like, how close is it going to get to Shohei money? Maybe not with the same deferrals, but like when you compare what Juan Soto's contract could look like based on what we saw from Shohei Ohtani, like how close can he get to Shohei?
I think Juan Soto is the best hitter in the game of baseball, to be honest with you. I think what we've seen over the last, since his tenure in the league, since he joined the league, I mean, you're comparing him in a lot of different ways to Ted Williams, his on-base percentage, the amount of walks he takes, the power that he has. So I think he has every bit the potential of being the best hitter in the league, if he's not already. So do I think he gets the same contract as Shohei? I don't. The reason Shohei is getting the money that he does is because he's a two-way player and does both. But I think we could certainly see him get up at least a little bit over half of that. But and I think he's worth it. What he's done for that Yankees lineup, you got to remember, Aaron Judge isn't hitting right now, and it's been a struggle for him to start the year. But the Yankees are playing really good baseball, and that's because Juan Soto is carrying that lineup right now.
Yeah, the Yankees second in the American League East, and of course our Blue Jays at 500. I wonder for you, with a little bit of an outside market perspective on where you view this Blue Jays team going. Obviously, that means that they probably need a little bit more production from their top three, but their pitching's been great. It's been a bit of a up and down season to start, and they're hovering around 500, dealing with, you know, a little bit of expectations that they haven't met yet. How do you view the Toronto Blue Jays?
I think the Blue Jays are in a tricky spot because you've built the team around a guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I was actually just talking about this on my show yesterday, or even the one that came out today, I think. But he's a guy that you're building a team around, and you need him to be your three-hole hitter, and you need him to be a superstar. And right now he's just not that. And not even right now. Since 2021, when he was second in the MVP voting, he's been a good baseball player. He has not been an elite baseball player. And I think he won his arb case. He's getting paid almost $20 million this year to be a player that gets paid $20 million, and he's not that. He's hitting right around the 220 mark with not a lot of power. So to me, the Blue Jays are in a tricky spot. They have a really good rotation. Their team is built around Vladdy Jr. and their rotation. The rotation, I think, is lights out. But right now, the offensive production isn't there, and you're getting closer and closer to Vladdy Jr. being a free agent, and I don't know what you do. You need him to be elite. You can't have him just being good. I don't think that lineup is capable of being as good as they need to be if Vladdy Jr. is good, not great. So to me, that's the problem, is the production in that lineup. You can talk about 1 through 9, but if Vladdy's putting up numbers like he did at the beginning of his career, it's a totally different lineup. Everybody else elevates. It's sort of what I was talking about with the top of the Dodgers lineup. The second you have one guy performing to the best of his ability, it makes everybody else want to be better, and it creates a snowball effect. And I've been in lineups that's the case, and I've been in batting lineups that it's the opposite, where everyone around you seems to be struggling, and it's just a snowball effect one way or another. So I think the big thing for the Blue Jays is you need Vladdy to be back to his MVP-type form, and unfortunately he hasn't been close to that for a couple of years.
Yeah, therein lies the Blue Jays' plight in all ways, really. It's interesting, right, because you mentioned the arbiter's rule, so we do have an evaluation on Vladdy, at least financially, for one season. But in a hypothetical world where, let's say, Vladdy hits market tomorrow, what's your best guess at what actually would happen? And this could be not just for the Blue Jays. He hits market, open market. Every team in Major League Baseball could involve themselves. What do you think would happen?
I think we'd see a deal similar to what Cody Bellinger got with the Cubs last year. It's a deal that, okay, this guy won an MVP award with the Dodgers, but for the last couple of years, he has not been very good. He can't hit 200, and I'm not saying that about Vladdy. I think he'll hit over 200 this year, but a similar sort of deal. Like, what Vladdy are you going to get? Well, we don't exactly know, so we'll pay you in that middle ground, but we're only going to give you a one-year deal. I think that's what he's looking at right now, is a team maybe willing to take a chance on him, but saying, we don't exactly know what we're going to get out of this guy, so you need to go prove it. And I think that's the state that Vladdy is in right now, is, man, he's running out of time to go prove it. He's got to figure it out, or he's going to end up on a deal that I don't think he wants.
Yeah, a little bit of a bitter taste in the Blue Jays' mouth right now, leaving Kansas City, losing on a rain delay. I think it begs a conversation, right? Because the Blue Jays are wanting that game to happen. They're pushing through. They're trudging through horrible conditions, and yet, you know, their wants and their wishes ultimately in the end get washed away by the rain because they just couldn't get it started. Again, like, should there be more stricter protocols around rain delays, rain games? Because it does feel like the Blue Jays kind of got screwed over a little bit in yesterday's game, and it's a difficult way to lose a series and to leave a four-game set that just has kind of changed the complexion of the Blue Jays season here, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is just teams knowing, like, how to manage it, you know? So I get that everybody in Toronto is frustrated by the way it played out, but, you know, that has been part of baseball for a long, long time. And I think teams have just used leverage to be able to handle the situation. Like yesterday, the Royals know, everyone in the world knows rain is coming. And the Royals have Cole Reagans on the mound, who's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And in their mind, it's, oh my God, this is a race to get five innings in. If we can get through five innings with our best pitcher on the mound, I like our chances to be winning the game. And then if the rain comes, well, guess what? You're SOL in terms of the Blue Jays, and that is exactly what happened. So I don't know what you do if, you know, you can't say every game needs to go nine innings, because then you'd run into a situation throughout the year where you're just leaving guys in the clubhouse till 2 a.m., and you just can't be doing that. So it is frustrating for a team like the Blue Jays that it literally just happened to, but I just felt like it was the Royals playing a game. They knew it was coming. They knew they had their best pitcher on the mound, and they knew it was a race to five innings. And, everybody played under the same rules that day. It just so happened the Royals came out on top.
That's why you have a dome, and the Toronto Blue Jays have a beautiful one, and they're going to take it on the Dodgers tonight at 7 o'clock. Ben, we appreciate your time tonight. Thanks so much for filling us in, and hopefully we can chat down the road.
Of course. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Ben Verlander, Fox Sports and the Flipping Bats podcast, and Blue Jays taking on the Dodgers at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan and our beautiful Rogers Center. You never have to deal with rain delays. That was the first time we had to deal with a rain delay on the Fan pregame, where we were in the building waiting to do our show.
You were notably absent yesterday.
Yeah, we weren't here. If you were looking for us, we were in the building, but we were not on air because the game just kept getting pushed back and pushed back and delay. And we thought, okay, if they cancel the game, we can still do our show, but they didn't cancel the game. So we were still in the building. We were ready to give you all of our knowledge, but we just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It was a weird day, folks.
It does feel, again, I think Ben laid it out perfectly, like the Royals knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, like, why are you allowed to push to the five when clearly it's bad, right? Because it gets even better, but they're like, nah, because, you know, you're running against time constraints as well.
The thing that sucks for the Blue Jays, they had to fly home. Like, they've got a game today.
Yeah, and I guess they could have just waved the white flag and gone home earlier,
but they wanted to see
you don't want to lose three straight games in Kansas City.
For sure.
So it just feels like there should be something a little stricter there. Like, I don't think teams should have as much influence mm-hmm. as they do, I guess, because it definitely felt like, yeah, both teams had a say, and Kansas City's strategies obviously were more successful, and that doesn't feel like it's totally fair.
Tonight's a big one, obviously, for a multitude of reasons. Shohei Ohtani back in town. We've got our guy, Teoscar Hernandez, back in town. Mm-hmm. And I was just on Twitter during the break, and I saw Sportsnet Stats had tweeted that tonight marks the five-year anniversary of Vladdy's MLB debut. And I remember the energy at that ballpark 5 years ago. I remember finding out that he was going to be getting called up. I got a ticket, went down. I was one of the first people to get a Vladdy jersey, because I remember they had in the Jays shop, they had a guy filming the first customers in, and I grabbed a Vladdy jersey because I was number 27 too. I was obviously excited. And I was showing the Vladdy jersey to the Jays shop TV guy, and I was on Sportsnet before I even worked here.
That was my debut.
And they had me with my little Vladdy jersey, and it was electric to see Vladdy get his moment, his big debut. This was 5 years ago. So I'm going to add that into my best bet tonight.
I'll just quickly interrupt you, because 5 years. It's only been 5 years, and now we're talking about Cody Bellinger comparables,
yeah,
where you're
tough.
Trying to recoup any value you could possibly have. It's amazing that it's been 5 years. And there was so much promise, and now there's so much pessimism surrounding the player and what he might actually mean mm-hmm. to the organization. Sort of maybe take some value off your special jersey, number 27,
early on, like one of the first ever.
Maybe
special.
It's worth more than, you know, the sum
there's
of
no
the
way
threads.
To authenticate that it was one of the first.
But I mean, that's not what anyone thought 5 years ago, right? That you'd be comparing it to an ex-MVP mm-hmm. who had to settle for a real short contract that was, you know, a couple $100 million less than it was intended to be.
So anyway, Let's look ahead at tonight.
There's okay, you want to be positive?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm going to try my best.
You're the one who wants to boo Shohei.
I want to end the Friday, a great week on the Fan Pregame, minus one day, on a good note, or at least one that could be profitable. So tonight, there's a bunch on the network. I'm going to go on my best bets. Of course, we love a revenge angle. A Shohei Ohtani home run is plus 280. I think the other night, the Mark Stone anytime goal in his NHL return in the playoffs, that was scriptwriters. Boom. Here's scriptwriters 2.0. Ohtani comes to the Rogers Center, hits a home run, plus 280. I also can give you the Teo home run is plus 480. And with the fact that it's Vladdy's five-year anniversary, yep. He's a big Teo guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a Vladdy one in there last minute. I didn't give the prop number before, but it's 550. So just something fun tonight at the Rogers Center.
There you go.
Hopefully, give everybody something to boo about and cheer about.
Less of a pitcher's ballpark tonight at Rogers Center. I mean, you mentioned the Mark Stone run. Like, yeah, obviously there was,
it was some crazy.
There was some script writing element to it. But again, I go back to the Mad Men meme. I don't know if Shohei's inspired by the fact that he's back in Toronto, or in Toronto, I guess, for the first time in a while. But yeah, I would rather play the Ohtani one over Vladdy. We'll just say that at plus 280. My bets, I'll go to the NHL and the NBA. I love the Oilers on a bounce back tonight. Minus 1.5, puck line, plus 185. You know, there's people down on the Oilers after that game, and I guess there's reason to be because Stuart Skinner didn't play that well, and you generally need goaltending to go far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I think it's so obvious that the Oilers are the better team. Mm-hmm. And if the Oilers get a lead, I think the Oilers can protect a lead, pile on, and they can make it similar to game one. So I do think there were some unlucky elements in that game. I think the Oilers bounce back, and they're still going to make quick work of the LA Kings. And the Timberwolves are up 2-0 in their series over the Phoenix Suns. I was on the Suns to start. I am off the Suns. Not
okay,
interested
off the Suns.
In the Suns anymore. They've been brutal in this series. I think the Timberwolves are going to win this game. I think they're going to at least cover the 5 points. It actually was moving in the direction away from the Timberwolves.
Any points, 5.5 now.
Any points you can get with the T-Wolves tonight, I will take, because I think these two teams told you who they are within the first two games. I think it'll play out similar to Denver and LA last night, where Denver, yeah, they were pushed a little bit in games one and two. And then everyone expected a bounce back from the Lakers, and then the Nuggets just did what the Nuggets do and beat them, went up 3-0. I think the T-Wolves do the same tonight.
Okay, let's just riff off the hockey for a second. Vancouver and Nashville, obviously no Thatcher Demko. He tried to get the most out of Elliott Friedman. He didn't have too much, but there's things like ACL tears. There's a lot of craziness going on.
Well, he
there.
Did say he was pretty adamant that, yeah, not going under the knife. If yes. It's an ACL, you're going under the knife.
For sure. And the fact
unless
that
it's a minors.
And the fact that he's traveling might mean something. Regardless, they have a big one tonight against Nashville. This is in Nashville, so Nashville getting their chance to host. 7:30 on Sportsnet. You've got Edmonton and LA, which you just talked about. That's at 10 o'clock. If you're looking for Rangers in Washington, that's Sportsnet 360 at 7 o'clock. And Winnipeg and Colorado, 10 o'clock on CBC. Man, I think that Washington is donezo. I thought it was really interesting. Spencer Carberry kind of calling out Ovi lightly. Like, nobody really calls out Ovi, you know? And he said, like, we need more from the guy. He's not doing much. I think he got no shots over the first two games, basically. So maybe it's an Ovi bounce back, but they look like they're ready to say bye-bye for that one. And then Winnipeg, Colorado. Can't wait to see how this one goes, because it's been a bit of an up-and-down fest with those two. So it's a big night of game threes ahead.
Yeah, Winnipeg, Colorado remains very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. They'll see how it plays differently, given that they're not playing in front of the whiteout anymore. Not to say that it's not loud and rambunctious in Colorado, but I don't think it will be exactly the same. Maybe the altitude will affect. But yeah, maybe that helps in a way Connor Hellebuyck, because he's been pretty bad to start these playoffs. Mm-hmm. For Winnipeg, he's going to have to be great for them to accomplish anything really, especially in particular beating the Colorado Avalanche. So maybe Winnipeg is bolstered by a bounce back performance from Connor Hellebuyck.
Do you agree with the Jays being big time dogs tonight?
Oh, they're big time, plus 100, weren't they?
All right, so maybe Jays win one at home.
Maybe.
After only playing half a ball game yesterday.
You are betting on Ohtani and Teo home runs, so
crazy things can happen.
The Jays do have a ceiling right now of 5 runs.
That's true.
Be solo shots for the Dodgers.
That's it. All right, big night ahead. All of our sports. Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 1 for the Blue Jays game, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan if you're looking to listen to it. That was a fun one. We'll be back on Monday. There would be no rain delays then. We will definitely be on the air. See you guys then. Have a great weekend.